You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
When you're drinking a frozen beverage from McDonald's, your brain may not like how refreshingly cold it is. But the rest of your body? Oh, yes. It's gonna relish every moment of it. Because there are drinks. Then there are drinks from McDonald's.
Get all the chill you need for just $1.69. From any size frozen drink, like a frozen Fanta Blue Raspberry, to a new ice-cold lemonade. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
This is a podcast from Minute Media.
It would be a Wolves fan, eh?
On goes Paul. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. It's me, Rich Hobbs. I was going to say celebrating Wolves 1-0 win over West Ham. I'm getting so used to talking about us winning this season. It's a wonderful, warm feeling. Joining me, I was going to say as ever. It's not as ever because he's not always on the show. But joining me is Blake, who I'm pretty sure if we never lost a game whilst you've been on, or was it a winning streak?
Nope.
I just want to make sure. We're on a winning streak or a defeat streak.
I think it's a winning streak. Because I think, yeah, every single time I've been on this show, we've won. So
I was going to say, if that isn't a reason to keep having you on, I don't know what is. And also joining me is the Senior Vice President of the King Kilman Club. It's Adam Price.
I need to get a badge made up now with that title and something like here to help underneath.
See, I'm thinking sign for the, I'm assuming where you are is the study door. So like a little plaque and also one of those things you can get on a desk as well, like the triangle. Yeah.
Yes. I need to basically have a corporate Kilman desk. It's basically what I need. That's what I need.
Yeah. I think we can make it happen. We're looking for Fancast budget. I know what we're doing for Secret Santa this year, so that works out perfectly. So I was going to say, before we get going, we'll get through the admin. As always, we're really proud to be part of the 90 Min Football Podcast Network. Really great to be associated with them. Go check them out as well, alongside having our podcast being affiliated with them. They also do lots of blogs and articles as well, so keep up to date on all of that. Let's go to Saturday, because we were chatting about it beforehand, in terms of it just being almost surreal how good a game it was, both from a Wolves perspective, from a neutral. So let's dive right in. First game back after the international break. Always a bit of uncertainty around it. Starting lineup comes out. I think the only major talking point was who was going to play on the right attacking wing. Was it going to be Podence, Troyer, or Trincao? It was Podence. At the time, guys, Adam, how did you sort of feel about DP10 starting?
Yeah, DP10. I think he'd been, if you're keeping a close eye on the social media channels all week, and more specifically Podence's social media channels all week, he'd been dropping subtle hints, hadn't it, all week, that he was, I think he put something on about it's my time to shine or something like that. So it seems to me that he'd been told fairly early on that he was going to get a fair chance, or get his chance this week, which I was actually quite pleased about. to be honest, because obviously I've said on this podcast before how Trincao I'm not still completely convinced by, although he did have a good game against Everton. And Traore is obviously a bit of a weird one at the moment, because there seems to be a bit of politics around his reasonings for being out of the team at the moment. So, and Podence's actually been quite a good impact sub, and I use that term with a bit of dread on Podence's behalf, because someone like him obviously doesn't want to be stuck as being the quote unquote impact sub. So that was the one major thing that we had to talk about lineup wise, because whilst Trincao's been okay, I've kind of wanted to see Podence have his chance for a while as well. I'm glad he got it, and I think he took his chance as well.
Yeah, 1,000%. Blake, were you sort of similar mindset in terms of sort of Podence starting? I think.
I don't really think it's a surprise to anybody, because, I mean, the position itself has essentially been a carousel this whole year. I mean, we don't really have anyone at the moment who's solidly taken that spot, partially because Neto's gone. But, no, I was glad to see Podence, because, you know, I think Podence has a lot of promise, and like Adam had said, he did take a lot of his chances. I mean, he looked a little unfinished, let's say, a bit rough around the edges, just because I think he hasn't played in starting 11 for a while, or at least consistently. But no, I mean, he set up Raul beautifully for the goal, and you certainly can't fault Bruno for putting him out there.
Yeah, I think the other thing that I thought was interesting, for want of a better word, is I think he gives us a really good option that if you've got him playing on the right, and although I don't think that's probably his preferred position, he has the option to kind of drift inside and either play, you know, behind a front two, and everyone kind of moves along a bit, and there's quite a lot of dynamism in terms of what he can offer in terms of creating space. And I'd be interested to know or work out, and I probably should have done it before I started recording, you know, a podcast on it, is, you know, both kind of, we've all kind of said, you know, it's a bit of a carousel. None of them are really getting like three or four games in a row, it feels like. And Podence seems to be someone who he needs that run of games to really make an impact, because it can be kind of hard to judge a player. As Adam said, like, you know, it is great coming off the bench against Villa, but then how does he follow it up? And, you know, he doesn't always necessarily start a game strongly and things like that. So, yeah. So I like the idea of having Podence in the team, because he offers you something a lot different to, I think, a lot of players. But we'll go on to the game itself. And first 15 minutes were either of you to a little bit anxious, because West Ham been great form this season. You know, Moyes done a really good job of basically making the 2021 version of his Everton team from 15 years ago. And they started really well and started opening up a lot of space, even though I've had one or two chances, but nothing, you know, too threatening. Blake, how did you sort of find most of that opening exchange before Wolves kind of found their rhythm?
Yeah, it was nervy. I mean, I wasn't melting down over it or anything, you know, it wasn't necessarily dreadful. But yeah, it did just kind of look like, you know, West Ham were going to be the better team to begin with. And yeah, it just kind of seemed like we were kind of letting the game slip away from us in that first 15 minutes or so. But that being said, we didn't really give up any massive chances, and we just sort of held out until we could sort of take back possession of the game. And after that 15 minutes, we never really looked like we were going to concede. So granted, first 15 minutes weren't as great as they could be, but they certainly weren't poor.
No. Brycey, how about you?
Yeah, I thought the first 15, you could see where, like, you could see how Moyes got them to where they are on the table. They're quite well-drilled, good quality players. I mean, and that midfield battle was always going to be interesting. You know, Rice and Souček against Neves and Moutinho. And yeah, you got a sense that the first 15 where we thought, okay, yeah, I can see why what people have been saying, what we saw on the TV thus far, where, you know, good skillful players, good on the ball, well drilled. But then, as we've said, you know, Saad never really had any major saves to make, for not just in the first 15, but then for the rest of the game. And I suppose the first half as a whole was, after that cagey 15 minutes, the rest of the first half was kind of like, oh, okay, you know, it wasn't any groundbreaking moments at all in the first half, to be honest. But it was, I guess you'd call it like one of those cliches, it's a bit of a chess game, essentially, the first half. You know, nothing really, no standout moments. And, you know, I don't really think either match today they had much to call out from the first half from what I watched this morning. But, yeah, it was kind of indicative of two teams kind of feeling their way back into a bit of familiarity after an international break. And these sort of games after an international break, they can kind of go one of two ways. The way that we saw yesterday, and it can go the way of like Newcastle, Brentford, where it just gets silly and it's goals galore because everyone's forgotten what the tactics are during the week because they've been away with the national teams.
But yeah, you're completely on the money. I think it sort of shows that both teams' like foundations are kind of fairly built on having a solid defence, because, you know, for the first half an hour they had the first 15, we had the next 15. It did sort of feel like, right, they've had their time to like assess what we're doing. Then it almost came like, right, you have the ball now, you have a look at what we're doing, and like neither team could just find a way through. It was both teams played really good football, you know, both attack minded, wanting to, let's say, do things right, but also had that bit of steel about them. And, you know, where West Ham, you like, you look at, you know, their centre midfield of Rice and Souček, a robust pairing, particularly when you compare it to Neves and Moutinho. But saying that, we could probably highlight, I think, I would scroll down about eight players who I'd like to give recognition to, which I won't give all of them. But Neves yesterday, again, as I said, against a combative, strong, very, very good midfield, didn't half hold his own. And same with Moutinho, but both of them were absolutely on song yesterday to really, I say, after that opening exchange, really dominate through that middle of the park. I thought they were both fantastic yesterday.
Yeah, and, you know, there was one standout moment, to be fair, in the first half where Jimenez, well, probably should have scored on the cheap chip that he made against the keeper. But even still, I mean, it was a beautiful ball from Neves to send Jimenez through, and by all likelihood, VAR probably would have called him offside. But, you know, look, we dug it out in the end, and yeah, Neves did absolutely fantastic.
Neves has been like the season of his life, isn't it, at the moment?
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, I think I was going to do a poll on Twitter saying, like, all biases aside, who'd you rather have, Declan Rice or Ruben Neves? And then actually I looked at the Premier League stats, and on their app you can compare the two players. I mean, it's not a huge amount in it, but like Neves does like win like most forward passes, most passes, most tackles. I was like, oh, bloody hell, I can't really do this now. But in terms of Neves, again, he's having the season this season that I think a lot of us, particularly me, thought he was going to have last season. And for one reason or another, it sort of stuttered. You know, whether it was him personally, team as a whole, club, whatever. But this feels like he's hit the point of progression where we're expecting him to hit when he went up to the Premier League. You know, it was like a Rolls-Royce player in the Championship, and it never kind of quite had that same feeling in the Premier League. Whereas now, fourth season in, feels like we've got that, where everyone kind of just assumed he'd be now. And I mean, he's still ridiculously young, isn't he? But it does feel like he is, you could class him as one of the really top quality centre midfielders in the Premier League now.
I think it's been like afforded, well, you say last season he it wasn't a patch on what he's now. I think obviously there's quite a few clear reasons for that about like the how the team was set up and how we were asked to play. The handbrake was on, but this year it's like we don't even, he doesn't have a handbrake this year, Neves. He just doesn't have one at all. He's in fifth gear every game because he's just running the games at the moment, Neves. It's almost like he's been given license to go off and just do his thing. He's under no sort of heavy tactical restraint. It's just essentially Bruno sent him out there with instructions of just do you, go out there and just do what you do best. Get on the ball, pick your passes, pass it round. Even if everyone thinks you're having a really bad shot that turns out to be an awesome pass, do that as well. It just seems as though he's just everywhere at the minute. He just seems to be in the middle third. He's just everywhere at the minute. He's just having the season which like we thought we would. There you go, Neves to Moutinho, pass or slot.
I was going to say I will hop forward because Rob Cartwright asks two questions in Twitter corner, which should actually be an automatic dismissal of both. However, we have brought one of them up, so I feel obliged to be able to bring one up. The Neves to Moutinho, guys, are we calling it an ingenious pass or an awful shot?
Why not both?
I mean, it just shows when you look in, isn't it? And he is just, it's that level of consistency which he's not quite been able to produce in the last couple of years. Like you'll get like three or four games off him in a row and then it might dip and you know he might drop out for Dendonka or you know changes to a 3-5-2 and X, Y and Z. But this season, you know, we're 13 games in? Something like that. I really should know. But you know, he's probably had two not amazing games, and I'd argue those are, you know, probably games where the whole team played poorly and was more indicative of that. And yeah, just again yesterday, just typified what he's all, you know, what he's all about. The passing, but the dogged defensive work that he gets through as well. And you know, it's a side to his game that he relishes as well. And you say, like Adam says, it feels like he's just been given license to just do what you're good at, and you know, the rest will sort of take care of itself. I was going to say, saying that, one thing I think's quite interesting with Neves is when he plays well, so do at least one of the wing backs, because he's got players to feed a lot of the time, and it feels like this year he's using the likes of Semedo more to open up the pitch. Again, I mean, I think Nelson Semedo probably played slightly better than Nate Norrie, but I thought both of them yesterday were just fantastic in terms of what they offer the team. I mean, particularly like you look at Semedo for the work he did for the goal, let alone anything else. He just, again, he seems to be the player who we thought we were getting 18 months ago, all of a sudden.
Yeah, I mean,
I
know that there's been a lot of people who sort of badmouth Semedo for one reason or another, but he's certainly come around, and I don't really think that you can reject that now. I mean, he might not be the attacking force that he could be, but I mean, defensively he's superb and he gets the ball up the pitch. So for a wing back, I don't know what more you're really looking for.
Yeah, I saw some people online who still are saying that he's still got to convince me, or he's still got some convincing to do. And I thought, what else do you need, you know, to be convinced about? Because he's consistently played well now for a very long time.
I'd say since the start of this year, you could argue. Yeah, so he's basically knocked in a calendar year of, you know, solid defensive performances.
And not only is he good on the defensive side, obviously as being a wing back, he's actually good at getting forward. He's actually bringing an element of what Traore does to his own play as well. He's happy to take on their full back. he's going to get the ball in. Got the good link up players. What we said, he's solid. He's dependable. He's not really injury prone. I think I can't remember last time he actually missed a game through injury as well. But Semedo, he's just as we said, he's a player which we all got excited about when we signed him. But obviously, again, due to the conditions and the scenario last year, we didn't see immediately. But even then, last season, people were saying, "Okay, well, I can see that there's some green shoots of a really fantastic play here." Even though we weren't seeing it regularly, but now we are seeing it regularly. I don't know. I think it's going to be one of these issues that we have again with Wolves fans, in that because they didn't like him at the start, they're never going to like him ever. Yeah. It doesn't matter what he does now. That their initial opinion just has stuck with some people, and they can't deviate or they can't change from those opinions, because you know that it's probably not even limited to Wolves fans, is it? It's probably just football fans in general, you know. I don't know, but you know what some people are like, you know, they've made their judgment and that's it. Bang, they can't change from it.
Yeah, it's like it's okay to be wrong, you know. Players do improve and get
I'm wrong
better
all the time.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm used to it. I'm comfortable in my ability to be wrong. I can just ask my wife and she'll list quite a few occasions if I'm not careful. But, you know, let's say, steady Eddie Semedo. That's all I'm saying. I did realise after thinking of that yesterday and Ben not using it out of fear of embarrassment. West Ham, as a club / when you play them, I already know the show title for today. It could have been about 4 or 5. They were a very pun-heavy football club. You know, you can make it. There's a lot of wordplay you can use around some of the players, but the nicknames of West Ham and stuff like that. I'm going off tangent. I know it's not in the running order, but I feel it needs to be said, because I made a joke about chips over rice yesterday, which was genuinely awful. I know it. I'm appreciative of it. But also, like that. I don't know. I just feel like how many, not even, you know, in the show title, it won't even involve the word hammer. I mean, because we only won 1-0. But, you know, imagine if Jimenez has scored that dink, what I think is trying to be his trademark. I've got a whole thing. He wants to be like known as a striker. You know, that's his trademark finish. But anyway, I will drag the show back of my own tangent. The Wolves goal, I mean, we've already talked about Podence coming in, the impacts he had yesterday. We've talked about Semedo. Both of them involved in the goal. I mean, it was just a fantastic team goal. Proper training ground, flowing move. Everyone knew what they were doing. Jimenez's third goal of the season. And what I wanted to note on it was that was a very archetypal Jimenez goal from the last couple of years, in terms of like just taking a step back, the cut back to him, and then just the astute finish into a bottom corner. That you know, his last two goals have been, you know, confident finishes of a superstar striker, but this was just bread and butter for him for me.
Yeah, cool, calm, collected. It really is that simple. I mean, he just took the ball and slotted it home, and it wasn't an easy finish either. I mean, he had, I think, about 3 defenders in front of him. Any of them could have easily cleared the ball away, but he just sort of found his way through all of them with his shot. And it was just, yeah, like you said, like a knife through butter.
I think it was after his first season at Wolves, he won an award at the annual awards, and I can't remember who it was. It might have been Cody, because he's quite good at talking and giving analysis. Said sometimes, you know, he's really good at tight, awkward finishes. You look at the goal he scored against Man U in the Cup, that goal against Spurs at Wembley, where it's almost just underneath his feet, and that had a bit of a feel of that to it, where he just knows what he's doing. But for me, I think, It almost the team aspect of the goal was just as important as the finish. How about yourself, Adam?
Yeah, I think I could, did it start with the kit? Did it start with Sar? I can't remember.
Yeah, it went all the way through the team.
I did see a clip online, yeah, when it pings up an icon of each player in the bottom left on Twitter. I saw this morning. If Portugal get an icon of every player who touched the ball, I think like over half the team touched the ball. And then there's a couple of things I liked about it. One, obviously, Semedo again getting the ball, driving forward with it. Then, yeah, it gives it to Jimenez, who's dropped deep, which we know he does. But it's just the way he's always involved in that. He's quite happy to drop back and be involved in the team build-up and then be on the end of our own build-up, you know. He's come in, he's dropped deep, he's got the ball, probably bought a player out of position, he's played it back into Pedence. And I love the fact that Pedence, again, it's only his, second start of the season, but he knows exactly where to put that ball for Jimenez. He knows that Jimenez is not going to continue to run into the box and look, you know, for a lofted cross into the box, trying to head it in. He knows that once that ball's been laid off to him by Jimenez, that he's going to cut it back for him again. And as we've said, you know, that finish, very, very typically him. You know, look through the highlight reel of Jimenez's 50-odd goals for us, and you'll see a lot of that type of finish. It wasn't an easy finish either. It was quite difficult. Obviously, yeah, we talked about the chip earlier. We did, you know, I was being in the safe bank, that looked a lot closer than what it actually was at the time when I watched that back. But that finish, brilliant. And you just think sometimes that if we created more than two chances a game for Jimenez, you know, how much more fruitful it'd be with us. But sometimes I think, you know, it's great how many goals scored for us, but if we could just create more for him, it'd be even more fruitful. But I just delighted him to score. And in a way, it was kind of meant to be, obviously, with his documentary that came out that we'll talk about, you know, later on the show. It was just fate, or just meant to be, that he would get a goal yesterday when after that came out. So delighted for him, as ever.
Yeah, 1,000%. I think the point you made about, you know, Poland's just immediately being able to drop in and just know what he needs to do. I think that's a kind of a cool thing for me, because it basically meant, I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It was almost like a team goal. But, you know, it beyond that, it was training ground. Everyone sort of just knew, right, I'm going to run in this direction. If Jimenez stays marked up, which you assume you'd mark a, you know, prolific goal scorer on the edge of the box, then you've got, let's say, two people running in and supporting and advancing. But Semedo then drags people out and keeps that momentum going for Jimenez to take that really good step back. Who else, Sean, for you guys? Anyone else as a standout for you?
Kilman, obviously. But I don't know. I just think everyone was brilliant. I mean, there's not really any performance you can pick out of that was even mediocre. I think everyone really played their part, and it was just a great performance all around.
Yeah. I mean,
I think, Rich, next time you ask that question, I'm going to have to just buy, like, I don't know, like a Burger King style King Crown, just put it on my head when you ask that question next time about who's played well. So I can just, for the visual view, if one's watching YouTube, I can just see where my logs are stamped.
I mean, we are 27 minutes into this recording, and it's taken me a lot of willpower, not to mention how, because of the lighting. I appreciate for the podcast listeners, this won't make sense, but it does look like Adam does have a halo over his head because of where his light is. So I am sort of just assuming everything Adam says is heavenly at this point.
It's either that, or I'm always got a good idea. Yeah, I never have, so it can't be that.
Me and Blake were talking about this before the show, and I've turned off a light because it is literally above my head, just to make sure, because I think you don't have to hear me speak for nearly half an hour to know that there are very few ideas good that are coming out of this mouth. In terms of man of the match, I've pulled up the poll we did on the Fancast. Genuinely, it was hard to nail it down to four, because I'd have had 8 Nori in there as well. You could have had Podence as an option, but, you know, I think Neves kind of ran away with it. But I mean, again, like, it's a nice problem to have, isn't it? that every week, particularly it's Kilman and Saar, when we kind of go around, you know, at 5 o'clock on a Saturday or whatever, we're saying, player I don't know who's getting, you know, enough praise is so-and-so. And they are, but everyone's doing so well. Everyone is just performing. And there's still room for improvement, don't get me wrong. But, you know, if it feels like at the moment a lot of our wins is as a collective. It's not just, you know, we've grounded out, the defence has had a good game, and we've nicked one on the break. It feels like everyone we played contributed to that win in one way or another.
Yeah, I know that with the King Kilman, I know that his first 15 minutes weren't up to usual levels, but as we talked about that earlier about the team anyway. But then after that, it was like, as Dan's tweet put out, you know, they spent 100 grand to get Antonio back just to be pocketed by Kilman the whole game. Yeah. And that was true. Yeah, Kilman, for the rest of the game, was up to like his usual very high standards. Could have had a goal as well. And let's talk about Ait Nora's little training ground set piece there as well. I fell for that hook, line, and sinker because he did the initial like run over the ball, and I just said out loud, "Well, who's that fooling?" And then he turns around and just pings it in. And
everyone, that's who he's fooling.
Fine. And I thought, well, fair play. Like we said about Aitnor as well. We already knew he was going to start. Marcel, I think, is pretty much now fit, but Aitnor just gives us again that more attacking injection down the left hand side. Marcel's good. Marcel's really surpassed my expectations because he's played, you know, the lion's share of the game so far. I didn't think he'd even get like three games in a row, given his previous injury issues. But you know, he's been solid enough up until now, and I'm not gonna knock him. But Aitnori, when we want to attack teams, you know, he's the guy that we need playing in that slot. He had a great game. Matinho also had a good get. Obviously, not to Neves' standards, but I thought Matinho played well. And so, yeah, you mentioned Saar there, Rich, as well. I mean, again, he didn't have any real saves of difficulty to make, but I'm seeing now that it's getting more and more the common opinion that we love Rui. I love Rui, you know, down to the ground. But what's Saar doing that, you know, Patricio could, you know, or the better way of putting that is, you know, what did Rui do that Saar can't and they can do better, essentially? Because Jose Saar, to be honest, has been an amazing goalkeeper for us. And for the price we got for Rui, for what we got for Saar, an amazing bit of business by the club as well. And I think that he's been playing Champions League football and winning the Greek league over and over again with Olympiacos, never got a sniff at the national team. He's been with us for 3 months. And he's already on the bench now for Portugal in the last round of their national team matches. So the theme there is, if you want to get in the national team, come to Wolves.
Yeah. I was going to say, particularly if it's Portuguese.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think that sort of wraps up the West Ham chat. I was say, like, it was a really good game of football. It was disappointing it was on last of match of the day. I've already had my bit of a rant about it because I completely understand why it was last, but it was still annoying. And it's like we had like, what, about 2.5 minute highlight reel?
Yeah, it wasn't very long.
Yeah.
But what I would like to sort of finish off with is just to sort of cement that, you know, it wasn't just that West Ham lost, it was that Wolves won. Because yeah, I think there have been a lot of performances this season where we've kind of debated, well, have Wolves won it, have, you know, so-and-so lost it. And I think last night was a really just solid performance from Wolves. And it wasn't like West Ham were just pushovers. They showed up and we were just the better side.
Yeah, no, completely agree. One thing that we sort of spoke about it just before recording was, would you say this was our best performance of the season? I guess like as an overall 90 minutes plus result. I mean, because you're right, some of the other victories, there's been, I wouldn't say a shadow or too many negatives. But, you know, the Villa game, fantastic way to win a game of football. But we still weren't great for large parts of it. A few of the others, Everton, we started really well. We had a great first half and then couldn't quite manage the game out. Whereas, all right, apart from the opening stages of Saturday's game, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't really nerve wracking, but it wasn't great. Apart from that, we you know, we're in control for it. And, you know, I just, you know, it was a shame we only scored one, because I think otherwise that's, you know, nailed on to be our best performance of the, you know, best game of the season, I guess.
Yeah, definitely. Villa is a one-off, really. That's not going to happen again anytime soon. And we didn't play well anyway, to be honest. That was just a crazy 15. But Everton game was quite clear, and by some distance, going to be our best performance of the season. But it ended up being our best first half of the season, because as we well know, second half we let them back into it. But I think this is their best. You could argue this is their best performance of the season because of A, who the opposition were, you know, someone who's in a great run of form, top 14, and just how well we controlled it. You know, against a team who's in the top four, we controlled it. We never looked in any real danger at all. As you said, we could have had more than the one that we scored. And just how we just completely nullified them. As you know, as Blake said, it wasn't as if West Ham turned up and just couldn't get out of first gear and we just took advantage. We just suffocated them and didn't allow them to play their own game, and we just basically excelled at our game plan. So I think, yeah, you could probably make a very good argument for it being our best performance this season.
Yeah.
So far.
Yeah, definitely. Right. Well, we'll round up the West Ham chat there. We're going to take a short break. You get to listen to a wonderful advert, and we will be back right after this, guys.
Hi everyone, Matt from Wolves Fancast here. If you're anything like me, time is of the essence these days. How am I meant to take training with my wonder kids on the managerial football simulation game that I'm not allowed to mention for legal reasons if I'm too busy worrying about my online media presence? Well, that's where our friends at pixelyetimedia.com come in. They're not just web designers, they're a creative agency that cover all of your design needs, from websites, brochures and signage, to marketing, logo design and branding. So go check them out at pixelyetimedia.com. They'll get you set up quicker than Adama Traore running at a terrified left back. Speaking of which, who's got my baby oil?
Hello and welcome back to Wolves Fancast. Two little tidbits I kind of wanted to kind of talk about, I guess, from preview show on Thursday to the show on Sunday. The first one, and it kind of came as a little bit out of nowhere, was the announcement of the Raul Jimenez documentary, Code Red, that details the aftermath around his skull fracture injury. And, you know, and the other sort of side of it I thought was particularly interesting as well was that it was also on BBC. You know, it was an in-house production by Wolves. We'll talk about the actual kind of, you know, content at the moment rather than just the production of it. But I did think, you know, it's pretty amazing that the club have actually produced a documentary internally, and it's, you know, I feel really lofty and liberal when I say this now. But actually, you know, it's free to wear for actually anyone to access it. And, you know, I think that is a really cool thing that, you know, they've you know, managed to get it to run on BBC. But, you know, away from the lofty values of free-to-air television, but the documentary itself, guys, have you had a chance to watch it in the last couple of days?
Yeah, it's really well done. I mean, it was an interesting moment, because I think none of us, when it happened, none of us really knew what it was going to be. Like, I mean, we've never really seen before an instance where somebody's really had a big incident with their head, certainly not with Wolves. I mean, you've certainly seen it around the world with in smaller scale, but for football, it's just a very rare occurrence. And I mean, he was out. He was dead out, and we all heard it for I mean, it was the only thing you could hear since there were no supporters. So it was a very, very scary moment. It was, I think, just very interesting to see how it all played out between, you know, Rawls' family and the personal trainers and Nuno, certainly. And yeah, it was just really interesting to see that side of it. And then it also showed a little bit of his recovery as well. And I know there's been the meme about him wearing his helmet for head football. And yeah, it was just really interesting to see how that all sort of happened and how emotional that kind of was for both for Wolves and for everybody who knew Raul.
Yeah, I think, because it was, I say it was on TV, it wasn't in front of a crowd. I'd kind of forgotten, I guess, some of those emotions behind it and how, you know, genuinely life-threatening it was. Like, you know, we're a bit numb to football injuries a lot of the time, I think. And, you know, that might just be me saying that, and I'm happy to sort of, you know, stand by that. But, you know, if a player turns and does his ACL in, you see it quite often. You know, there'll be at least one, you know, don't get me wrong, it's devastating when, you know, Johnny did it the first and, well, the second time. I watch a lot of American football, and, you know, there'll be at least one quarterback or one really good player who will tear it a season. And, like, that seems to be, you know, probably the biggest injury, regular injury a player can suffer. But, you know, it's like you forget how, like, genuinely, like, life-threatening that could be. In a way, it's like I bring up American football. It was a couple of years ago now. But it just reminded me of an American football player called Alex Smith, who he suffered like a double leg fracture, similar to sort of like the Eduardo, Aaron Ramsey, like clean break sort of thing. But he did the surgery, but he got an infection and it nearly like completely, you know, it wasn't going to be a question of whether he could play again. It was, you know, whether a question he could live. And, you know, that wasn't what you sort of first expected when he went down on the field and things like that. Cause you think, oh, well, they recover their athletes, they're, you know, superhuman, basically. Fortunately, Alex Smith, similar to this, actually did make a recovery, managed to sort of play a little bit of football again before retiring. They say the rawness when I think we all realised that something wasn't quite right did sort of hit home. And so when you sort of like Nuno's reaction as well, Pricey.
Yeah, there's a couple of things that I kind of took away from it. Firstly, that's I think they left the sound in, didn't they, in the documentary of when it actually happened as such. And as you said, there's nothing else you couldn't hear anything else at the time. And one thing that got me straight away is what Cody said. You know, he knew not for anyone to touch with him or mess with him. You know, he said that, you know, he's the one thing he knows is that keep them on his side. And you could hear, like the microphones obviously close to the pitch, you could hear him telling everyone, you know, don't touch him, don't touch him, you know, just leave him alone. And it's amazing how, like, he literally could have died right there on the pitch, essentially, or very short time afterwards, you know, and if he hadn't got the medical attention he did. And that was something, again, which I've learned from listening to what Matt Perry said, in that, you know, before every game, they've got everything mapped out, where the nearest specialist is, where the nearest hospital, trauma centre is, or whatever, the minutes that it'll take to get to that place, so they know exactly what amount of time they're dealing with. You know, I think this sort of thing, to go into every little game, all these finer details, the prep they must do right down to finer detail is amazing. And I got choked up a bit watching Nuno, to be honest, how much, you know, he just drawing those memories back, because obviously I think that this was filmed pretty shortly after he got the Spurs job, so he was obviously still in his Spurs gear. But, you know, he going back all that time, nearly a year ago, to the game, it still quite clearly affects him. You know, it just talking about it, because he was there living it at the touchline. obviously watching all the medical staff go past saying code red, and even he says himself, what is code red, what does that mean? And the fact that the players, you know, managed to put that to one side and go ahead and win the game is absolute testament to the players as well. And you've got to feel for, you know, his family, you know, the one, the family in Mexico who couldn't do anything, couldn't even get on the plane to come over because of, you know, the world conditions at that time. It just, to me, it brought home that little sense of helplessness, really, for his family. He just couldn't really do anything. And even, like, his partner, Daniela, who, well, just go in a taxi, but, you know, couldn't spend too much time with him. But, I mean, the whole thing is a testament to how much of a warrior that Raul Jimenez is. You know, that, well, was it the next day? Was it he was up and saying, yeah, I'm all right, I'm awake, when can I play, essentially?
Yeah.
Like, no, calm down, mate. You're always just one day at a time. And it's just what goes into his recovery as well, everything to get him slowly but surely, you know, up to where he is now and back scoring again. Amazing. Such a well-produced documentary as well. Credit to Yanni at Wolves for putting that together. I think he's got universal praise online, rightly so, for putting that together. What an amazing half-hour documentary it is. And obviously, there's probably too many Wolves fans who haven't seen it by now, but I'd obviously urge you all to watch it if you haven't. And then even if you're not a Wolves fan, you know, it's just a great half an hour documentary into what could have been, you know, a very, very black moment, you know, in football history, if had it gone the other way rather than the way it went.
Yeah, I think the awareness it brings to, you know, the hard work that doesn't just happen with those players on the football pitch from the medical staff. You say, like, you know, they plan and drill for this, you know, for this one in a million chance. And, you know, I think when you tie it in with, you know, probably the Christian Eriksen incident over the summer, but, you know, all the Wolves players, it was only about a month ago, wasn't it? But they all had like CPR first aid training. I don't know whether that was because of Christian Eriksen or Jimenez or, you know, or whatever, but I think it just shows, like, you know, this is a good football club. You know, this is a team who cares, and, you know, for one another and stuff like that. So it's really powerful. Say from top down, everyone involved, you know, we could kind of, you know, we could wax lyrical about all of them, the strength and the, you know, the skill to get back to the position we're in and to do it all. So, you know, as Adam said, watch it if you haven't. If you're listening to this and you're not a Wolves fan, maybe you're a sadist West Ham fan and you wanted to kind of pick a different thing, go and have a listen as well. It might make you feel a bit better about me scoring against you. I don't know. But, definitely go check it out, guys. The other thing I wanted to talk about, guys, a bit of a lighter note, we'll try and bring the mood back up from feeling sort of raw and emotional, is Connor Cody, your mate and mine, in between captaining Wolves, playing for England, helping out on an anti-bullying campaign this week. He's also appearing on Match of the Day 2 this evening. Is there anything he doesn't make time for? Do you reckon if you're moving house, like, you just go, yeah, don't worry, I'll free up some time, you know, Sunday morning, I can come help. He's just everywhere.
Yeah, no, he just seems like a total stand-up bloke, don't he? And
yeah,
this is sort of the question that's going to be interesting to see after he retires, is he going to go into management or is he going to go into commentary? I think that's going to be really interesting to find out. But yeah, no, I mean, this won't be his first time doing presentations. I think he did, what was it that he did before? I can't remember what else he's done, but I know he's been on telly with whoever before. And yeah, I mean, he's awesome. He's a great character, and thank God we have him at Wolves.
He seems like the kind of guy who, like, if you're painting a fence or something outside, he'd offer to come along and help, or it'd at least definitely make you a cup of tea or something if you were outside working. It would definitely do that. Yeah, I mean, what's left to say about the guy, to be honest? I mean, as you said, Rich, all the stuff he's done, and again, that was another video that brought a lot of emotion. The anti-bullying one that he did with that kid, that mascot, amazing. Again, what else can you say? Yeah, everyone just seems to love him. He mentioned the England squad. You know, he spends 5 minutes there, and any player that's been interviewed after being in the England squad just talks about Cody in glowing terms. Even Southgate, who didn't play him in the Euros, still said, you know, I'm gutted. We got to the final, I'm gutted. Well, because I never got to play Connor Cody. You know, everyone just seems to fall in love with the guy. And, you know, the fans rightly recognise, by and large, how much of an integral cog he is to our system. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to watching it. Some of his pearls of wisdom that will be on there, I'm sure. And I'm looking forward to seeing what he talks about Wolves, if he offers up any little nuggets of inside information.
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of really hoping for, because, you know, he can be sort of... I say this from, and this is a bit of a humble brag from interviewing him before, but he's a very good speaker, and he's very like... You were there as well, weren't you, Adam? But actually, I think he's quite... relatively coy about, you know, showing his personality but also being media trained at the same time, and like not giving away the whole shot, but he's got that bit of a thumb personality that he knows when to, you know, when to show it but also not to say something completely stupid like other people we've interviewed for the fan cast. I really hope that he just had, like, I hope he can give, you know, he's able to kind of show a bit of his personality, show his fun side, and also show that analytical, I guess, and how he kind of approaches the game, because, you know, he clearly knows, he orchestrates things onto the pitch. You know, I'd be quite keen to sort of see how he breaks down the Man City and Everton game and the Leeds Spurs game. So we'll see. We'll see. Shall we round up with some Twitter corner questions, guys? Right, let me fire them up. I can't really see, so let's see if it's this right one. Yes, no, that's one we already had. Sorry, guys. So first one up is Rob Cartwright. He put in two. I put both on, and I clicked the wrong one. Sound. Okay, so first one, because we've got Adam on, who is, as I said, the... executive vice chairman of the King Kilmer Club. I think we're all in it now, right? I feel like I've paid my membership dues at this point. I don't quite need a title as yet, but I think everyone's on board the Kilmer train. But Rob's question is, Kilmer to Qatar. Now, we are 13 months away from the World Cup. Admittedly, you know, he's not had a call up yet. There are other ones in front of him. Do we see any likelihood, if he keeps up this form, that he could be playing there, particularly if like Mings doesn't quite, you know, someone like Tyrone Mings, not just dig out a Villa player, but
no, if Mings can do it, Kilman can, let's be honest.
Yeah.
I'm definitely assuming we're talking not just about Kilman going on a random holiday to Qatar here. It's definitely about the World Cup.
That's what I've interpreted it, but you know what, Adam, you can take it whichever way you want.
Are we seeing Kilman in a random summer holiday in Qatar? Yes, World Cup. If the form continues as we expect, then he's got to be in the conversation. And like I'm channeling my inner Marcus Speller here by saying that he's on the plane. For me, you know, he's definitely got to be on the plane. When you look at some of the defenders that we've got at the minute, I mean he's already above like the out, you know, the outside dross, like the Michael Keynes of this world and what have you. For me, Mings is obviously a bit up and down, and this is all obviously based on current form. He's better than Mings anyway, in probably mine and many other people's views. And then probably, you know, based on current form, I wouldn't even play Harry Maguire. I'd be playing Kilman ahead of Maguire, because Maguire's a bit of a circus at the minute. So for me, if form continues per current trajectory, for me, he's got to be in there. I haven't seen anything to say otherwise. There's no evidence to say otherwise as to why he wouldn't be an England-class defender.
It's also worth noting that this is going to be a Winter World Cup. So he does have extra time, and I'm sure England will be playing some sort of friendlies during the summer. So
yeah, I think
he's going to get the call up then.
Yeah, I think there's the next international break's March. I mean, it'll be friendlies well between now and then. So I don't know, you've seen with Southgate that he's kind of quite committed to having players who have kind of helped through qualifying, but I think there's always a chance for those players who come in on form as well. So you know, fingers crossed for him because he's. You know, he's done the business for first third of the season. Right, next up, Paul Wharton asks, at what age is it socially acceptable to say, can we just go for a quiet one tonight?
I don't know what this is, so you guys are going to have to help me out with this one.
Right.
Blake doesn't probably go for just a quiet one anyway, just a quiet drink in the pub. Like,
oh, fair
enough. But you've got to actually... But you can probably say that, but it never actually sticks to that. It never actually ends up as a quiet one in the pub tonight. It probably ends up being a mad.
So you're popping out, then going out, then going out.
Yeah.
Then you stay out at the end of it.
Yeah. So I was going to say the quiet one would almost imply that you're going out for one drink, but you only want to go out for one drink, whereas no one really ever goes out for one drink. It's always. You know, multiple ones. At what age? I don't know.
It's got to be above 30s.
I'm thinking,
if you've got a couple of kids,
yeah.
Then you normally say that.
Yeah.
As someone who rarely has more than one drink, I think I'm a little biased here.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I'm going to go for 33.
Because... I feel like I've been saying that kind of phrase for a few years now. So yeah, I'll probably go along with that sort of 35 at the limit, ceiling limit.
Yeah, I'm good with that. Right. Let's do this one from Stu. I can't make no context to this one at all. Have you ever been told you're not as fat as I thought you'd be by someone you've never met before?
For context, Kim did say this to Stu last night when we all met at the pub, so we have it. But no, I have not. That's
I was gonna say,
you could probably on the slimmer side of the scale.
Yeah,
I was gonna say,
we're probably never gonna be mentioned. We'd be hard pushed to find out if anyone's told us that we are not as fat as they.
I'm a bit almost annoyed that this question has come up for you two, who are very slim in stature men compared to my slightly more stockier frame. No one's ever said I'm not as fat as they thought I'd be. I did have a co-worker once, so it wasn't straight away, but like they had our a photo of us on like a meet the team section on the website, and she admitted like about after like a couple of months of working there, she was like, I saw your photo and I thought you were going to be so mean and angry and like terrifying, and then I met you and realized after like 2 minutes that you really weren't any of those things. I was like, okay. It was like a generic headshot sort of thing, but like the angle was ever so slightly like I was leaning down. So yeah, I've never had anyone say I'm not as fat as they thought I'd be, fortunately. Last one to round us off is from Skills Geek. If you could pick the song played when Wolves win at Molineux, what would it be? So I guess not goal celebration music, which I think people are sort of on the fence about, blah blah blah, after we win. So yeah, I've been umming and ahhing about this one because I think there's a few good options.
Personally, I love it how we have it now with Everybody Wants to Rule the World. I mean, that's a fucking class song. So I don't know, I'm not too picky about win songs as long as we actually win.
I think I'll try and metal it up and play Metallica or something, Wolf and Man or something, anything with Wolf in the title, just to inject a bit of rock into the occasion. I would just because that's it. Just why not?
If you go down that path though, Adam, you could be playing Duran Duran and Good Luck for Wolf or Mumford and Songs, because they've got
also acceptable.
Are we accepting Trandram and Mumford? Okay, okay. I feel like you'd need something either. I think it depends on the victory.
Yeah. And
also, like, I guess, is the song to praise Wolves or is it to humiliate your opponents? So I think I'd maybe go for the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme tune if we beat, like, I don't know, Arsenal or Spurs and, like, make them, like, walk down the tunnel to it. That would work.
That would be class. Yeah. I would love that.
Like, really shithouse them.
Put it into the club.
Yeah. I'll send an email later. I'm sure they'll appreciate it. I'll message Russell Jones later. I'm sure he won't mind. Right. I think that's probably a good a point to end the show as there is, because otherwise I'm going to think of other songs. So big thanks to everyone who's joined us for today's show. Shout outs to 90 Min. Go check out their podcast network. To our sponsors, Pixel Yeti Media. Again, as Matt said, we had, for all your marketing needs, go hit them up. We will be back Thursday, I want to say, to preview the Norwich game, which I was going to say, I can't remember, I think it was the last podcast I was on, but I'm so glad they've won a couple of games. You just knew that we were going to be ones who'd lose first to them if they'd have kept up this, winless streak. So very glad about that, because I think we've then got now a good chance to meet them. But yeah, little Dan and the rest will be covering that game. Make sure you hit us up on all our socials, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and if you're not listening to this or / watching this on YouTube, go check us out on YouTube as well. We're on Wolves Fancast on all of those four because we like things nice and orderly. Until next time, though, it's goodbye from Blake.
See you, everybody.
It's goodbye from Adam.
See you guys. Take care.
And it's goodbye from me. See you next time.